After fleeing from her native Prague in August 1968, Liba Taylor made a new life for herself in the UK, where she studied photography under a member of the prestigious Magnum Photos group. From her base in London, she travelled extensively, documenting the work of major international humanitarian agencies, including the UNHCR, UNICEF, and Save the Children, in some of the poorest and most desolate spots on Earth. Today, in her early 60s, Liba Taylor is now living once again in the Czech capital. She came into our studio last week.
I'm from Prague, and I was born in 1950. Grew up in Kobylisy, which is the suburb of Prague, in a very kind of countryfied environment. You know, we had a farm behind the house and so on. So it was a very easy childhood. It wasn't really that easy from the political point of view because my parents went in the Communist Party. So I think I always knew that, you know, it was going to be very difficult for me to go and study unless things changed. So when I was 18 and I was thinking about what to do, I got the application to university, I just threw it out. And 1968, it was quite easy to leave the country. It was for the first time in my life when you could actually leave without any hassle.
But you left in August 68?
One day after the invasion.
So that was so quick. Had you already decided to go before the invasion?
I did, and I had my visas for England, and it was just a question of deciding when to go. So I was going to go in September. And I was going to be au pair. I didn't speak much English, so, you know, I spent the summer trying to learn some English. And then the invasion happened, and I just got completely paranoid that I wasn't going to be able to go. So I left the next day. I hitchhiked to England, and I stayed.
That year, the Soviet invasion was one of the biggest stories in world news. Did you find a lot of sympathy in England?
I did, actually. It was quite amazing. People were very sympathetic. People were very helpful. People were shocked. And in fact, I found sympathy and help on the way through Austria and France to England. The minute I said I was Czech, you know, there was immediately a lot of help available.
When you arrived in England, that was still the swinging 60s. Did that make a big impression on you?
I think I was in a completely different world. I was in a state of slight shock, you know. So obviously London made a huge impression because it was a big city and all the things one knew from pictures and films, you know, they were actually there all around you. So yeah, I was very happy that I was in London, and I was very happy that I managed to get out.
You eventually studied documentary photography. What led you to that area?
Well, I always used to take photographs. I was given my first camera when I was about 9 years old, and I learned to develop films and so on. And I used to take pictures on school trips and, you know, whatever, family pictures. I never thought I would be a photographer, although it occurred to me while I was still living here that, you know, FAMU would be a nice school to go to. But as I said before, it was going to be impossible. So I never really thought of it. And eventually, in England, it became possible. I mean, it became very possible to study anything in England, especially in those days. And then I met David Hearn, who is a member of Magnum, and he had just set up a school of documentary photography in Newport. And he invited me on the course, which was quite amazing because there were only 10 people every year. And I think because he was a friend of Joseph Kudelka, who was a very famous Czech photographer at the time. He thought I was going to be as good as Joseph. I think he was mistaken, but anyway, he gave me the opportunity, and it was a wonderful course.
You came to focus on photography linked to humanitarian projects, and you've devoted your career to that. What was the attraction?
I think the initial attraction was that I wanted to travel. And it seemed that that was a very good way of doing it. And I didn't really know very much about the humanitarian work, but, you know, I was a documentary photographer. And so I wanted to document something which wasn't photographing countries as a tourist. I didn't particularly want to do travel photography. So this seemed like a good option. So I concentrated on that. And I think I was also lucky because it was at the time time when the British aid agencies started realizing the importance of photography in promoting their projects. So, you know, I was one of the first to do it and actually get paid for it, because before it was usually rich people who were supporters and they would travel and take a few snaps and then they were used and they were usually quite bad. So I was quite lucky in that I was given a huge opportunity to spend a lot of time in villages in Africa and Asia and document the lives there.
You've done that work for many decades. Have there been any particular trips or any particular countries that made a deep impression on you?
Well, I think the countries which made the deepest impression were countries where people weren't going very frequently. And therefore, they weren't kind of westernized. They were kept in its original form, and that was Sudan. I mean, I traveled across the desert to Darfur and spent a lot of time in Darfur, and Somalia. And I've been to Somalia many times, and the first time when it was still Somalia, it was very peaceful. And then I was there during the war in Mogadishu, and I was there after the war several times. And lately I've been several times to Somaliland, because I've become very good friends with Edna Adan, who is an amazing Somali woman who built a hospital in Hargeisa and so on. So I feel very close to that country, and I think I'm one of not many people who actually traveled across Somalia and Somaliland several times.
In your work, you must have seen many terrible things, including immense poverty. I saw on your website there was a photo of a victim of an acid attack. What impression, or what impact rather, have such experiences made on you personally?
Well, I think over the years I've realized how actually difficult the world is for the majority of people. You know, the people who live in Europe and in America, you know, fairly easy lives is a very small minority. And the majority of the world actually live in very, very harsh conditions. You know, they live on breadline. They live on the verge of death every day. And it kind of politicized me in a different way than I was, say, coming out of here. And also made me realize that unless something is done about it, and nothing can be done about it to resolve the problem, because the problem is too huge. But I think it helps when people do support third world projects. They know about, you know, what's happening in the third world, and they spread the word, and they try to help to improve conditions, living conditions of people in those countries.
Have you found yourself in any particularly dangerous situations?
Well, not really, or at least, you know, they were potentially dangerous, but, you know, you are there and you don't really realize it. I think I was always more frightened kind of going, you know, leaving London and not knowing what I was going to go into. But once you get there, you know, it just become part of it. And I think the worst I've ever seen, and what was potentially dangerous, and a lot of people did have problems, was in Goma in 1994, I think it was, when there were 1 million Hutu refugees from Rwanda. The whole situation was totally chaotic. It was very dangerous. Journalists were robbed, had their cameras stolen, etc., etc. So that was probably the worst, but it was also the worst humanitarian disaster I've ever seen. And that is something which I will live with forever.
Were you more at risk as a woman in these situations?
I don't think so. I've never really thought of it like that. I think for me, I've made a decision that I was going to listen to what local people say, not take unnecessary risks. And if your guide says, you know, we don't go there because it's dangerous, you know, you don't make him go, because not only you put your life at risk, but his life as well. And, you know, people in places like Africa, you know, they are breadwinners for a number of people in the family. You know, they can be up to 50, you know, so you don't want to get him killed, you know, as a result of your ambition.
In recent years, you've returned to live here in Prague. How have you found that adjustment?
Well, it's very different. I always used to come back here, but it would be for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks maximum. So for me, it was always like another country you visit, you know, you're learning about it, you know, every day is a kind of different experience. I think living here is slightly different, and at the moment I'm feeling very nervous about who is going to win the presidential election, although I know that the president is not the most important person in the country, but it seems very important that the right person wins, because things have been slipping quite badly. You know, the amount of corruption you read about in the papers, etc., is unacceptable, and I hope that we don't slide down the same slope as we used to do every 20 years.
Finally, I was reading that you like to go on May Day and take photos of the old communists at Vistvische. Why is that?
Well, it's quite visual, and for me, it's I think it's almost me being absolutely obscene, you know, and trying to take funny pictures of the old communists, you know, who I grew up with, who were wrecking my life for 18 years until I left. So it's me coming to laugh at them.
And is it a kind of little revenge of yours?
It is a little revenge, yeah. I mean, it's a very small revenge, but, you know, that's what I can do.